Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you live from New York City. Good to be on the East Coast. Coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. And when you need an expert to help navigate the NBA playoff process, I can. Yesterday, told you on the program that this playoff season, in a way that has never been true before, and I was citing a general manager that I had spoken to about a month ago who impressed upon me this fact, that injuries would define everything about the postseason, that there would be a cascading number of them as the next few months unfolded because of the condensed season, because of the realities for players of being in a much more tightly sealed vacuum in this pandemic still than most of us are, which is great. Walking around New York City, felt alive today, felt alive yesterday. It's a beautiful thing. Got Pete Bilotti on the board today in his very optimistic Mets jacket. I got Tom DiBenedetto avoiding me. He's in L.A. because I'm in New York. I fly back to L.A. on Saturday. Tom will probably pop up in Miami. I don't know. Producer underscore Tom on Twitter. The world's back to normal for most of us, but not for players. And we talked yesterday on the show about how injuries and the reality that big-time players are expected to go down, this is around the NBA, would shape things. And even though I don't believe in my ability to curse things, you put something in the universe, you feel bad. I am a Cubs fan by birth. That's my tribe. And I do believe, earnestly and 100%, that a century ago, the Wrigley's not allowing a goat onto Wrigley Field is why it took a long time. Why Bartman had to happen, and why only, I mean, the Cubs have only won a World Series against an equally cursed organization of the Indians. So I feel bad that I may have put into the universe the fact, the curse, but I think it's the reality that injuries are going to shape everything, and that has proven true in yet another series. The Washington Wizards won a big game last night. Russell Westbrook was his magnificent, terrible self again. Not to pick on the guy, box score incredible, efficiency horrific, energy and effort and passion and grind better than maybe anybody in the game. But the only reason it paid off, and Bradley Beal played better. Bradley Beal, by the way, quick aside, Vegas set his over-under at three-point shots. This guy was the fourth leading scorer in the NBA in the regular season. In that elimination game, his over-under on threes was 1.5. That's the level to which this Washington offense has stalled. And they got the win. But they're not a good basketball team. We shouldn't be talking about whether or not Philly can win the series. We are for two reasons. One, Doc, my team's going to choke Rivers, and we'll get to Rivers in a second. And if you think I'm just being gratuitous and mean-spirited, I'm actually just being incredibly candid, which can be, those things can be confusing sometimes. And I'm going to let Doc just bury himself in his own, I don't have another word for it. It's ineptitude. It is, and Philly fans deserve better. But the other reality, obviously, is Joel Embiid. Hard foul, I think clean foul, went down, landed in a pretty scary way for anybody, but especially a player who has a history of injuries. And that's the other reality. Joel Embiid, like Anthony Davis, is one of the critical catalysts for success or disappointment in these NBA playoffs. And there's always going to be a question mark hanging over the heads of guys who can't stay healthy, who haven't played lots of games consistently over the course of their career. And ironically, because the universe has a way of being funny sometimes, winking at us, when Embiid missed time earlier this year, enough time that he was not the most valuable player, second on my ballot, would have been first, with all respect to Nikola Jokic, if Embiid had played those games. The injury that sidelined him was a knee injury that he sustained against the Wizards. Now, there's an MRI this afternoon. Maybe things are going to be okay. But the reality is that, for me at least, and I've talked about this, the Sixers strike me as a less talented version of the Brooklyn Nets. Won't be shocked at all. Would not be surprised one bit if they won an NBA championship. But it's not an expectation that I have. And in Philly's case, it's not just that Doc Rivers leaves a lot to be desired in the postseason. We'll get to Doc and his words in a second. It's not just that Ben Simmons, and we said this yesterday, literally can't shoot, did not anticipate that would translate to Haka Simmons. If you missed the game, wisely, the Wizards, before the final 2 minutes, just started fouling Simmons. We'll get to that in a second. Couldn't hit most of those free throws. 5 of 20 is what Ben Simmons is from the free throw line in this series. If you want to be more generous, his career free throw percentage in the postseason is right around 57%. Shaquille O'Neal, 54%. The main reason that I question what Philly could do when Embiid was healthy is their half-court offense and their ability to execute offensively in crunch time when things really tighten up. Philadelphia is a remarkable, remarkable defense. Second best defensive rating in the NBA behind the Lakers. But with Embiid, there felt like maybe a little more reliability because you didn't feel like Anthony Davis was necessarily going to be out there for the Lakers all the time. And then the injury happens. And I think we opened the show yesterday here on Rider Than You saying, quoting this anonymous GM, the NBA will be shaped not by the best teams, but by the healthiest teams. And look around the league. The Lakers are a 7 seed, but we all know that they're the 1 seed in our minds, right? If they're healthy, they're the best team in the NBA. Anthony Davis, going to miss the next game, injured. Phoenix Suns, 2 seed. I think one of the 3 best teams in the Western Conference. I think one of the, 5 or 6 best. I think they're on the same range for me as Philly. I don't know why they don't get the same respect. Wouldn't shock me if they won the whole thing. More than capable, have some weaknesses. For them, it's mostly their youth. Chris Paul has been highly questionable. Obviously had a remarkable physical turnaround in that last game. Utah, who won a pretty nice game against a scrappy Memphis team, had huge question marks about Donovan Mitchell. Now, he's back now, and he's scoring, my God, a point per minute on the floor. But remember, he missed game one. Utah lost that game, and he's played 25, 29, and a few more minutes last night. Because if he's healthy, they're a 1 seed. They're a contender. And if he's not, they lose to teams like Memphis. Denver, no Jamal Murray. Sixers, now we're at Joel Embiid. We didn't have the Sixers on this list yesterday. Who's next? I don't want to put it in the universe. But Milwaukee, you have to shudder and worry about the thought of injury. If you're the Clippers, it feels like it's going around. A Kawhi, who has had a history at times of some fragility, has been one of the better players in this postseason, kind of quietly as they've mounted their comeback. And the Nets obviously have 3 remarkable players, 2 of whom, in KD and Kyrie, have a history of injuries, and Harden was hurt this year. Even with Joel Embiid, I doubted whether the Sixers were good enough. And by doubted, I mean I didn't know. I don't have the answers. I think there are questions. Without Joel Embiid, they cannot win an NBA championship. They can't even win the next series. I don't think they would lose to the Wizards. Even without Embiid, they shouldn't lose to the Wizards, because the Wizards, and I'm going to get technical here, and I apologize. I know it's early out in the West Coast, but the Wizards, in a technical analytics sense, suck at basketball. They're not a good basketball team. They're not. And I like Russell Westbrook. He's, by all accounts, a great guy. A great guy. So am I. I shouldn't be in an NBA playoff game. Westbrook and what he does doesn't translate. And I, by the way, I didn't even mention the Wizards. Beal has not been right in this series, and it's almost certainly it is from injury. But the other problem I have with the Sixers is Doc Rivers. And I know it was trending on Twitter last night, and I wrote this column last year after the 3-1 collapse by the Clippers. There are 11 3-1 collapses in the history of the NBA playoffs, and Doc Rivers has been at the helm of 3 of them. And I can give you all the stats about his 2-0 collapses, his 3-2 collapses, but let's just cut to the chase. It's a lot. there's a sense of panic. There's a lack of tactical adjustments that happen. You also have to know what you're talking about. And if I can just go to this Ben Simmons free throw thing, I don't think an NBA championship is going to be shaped by Ben Simmons not hitting free throws, but it might be shaped by a coach who doesn't understand or know how to navigate that or even analyze it. If you miss what happened at the end of that game, because Ben Simmons is a prodigious defender, is a wonderful, wonderful passer. He's a not a good, he's a great basketball player. But as I've said to you again and again and again, he can't shoot. Jimmy Butler can leave a lot to be desired as a teammate, but the reason it didn't work in Philly is he couldn't stand Embiid and Simmons' work ethic. Now, in Embiid's case, there are shades, less talented, but shades of Kobe and Shaq, because Embiid's so talented, even if he's eating, it's not In-N-Out Burger out east, is it? It's probably Five Guys. Even if he's eating like seven things of Five Guys a day, it doesn't matter. He's that talented. Simmons isn't that talented. He's talented, but he's got to work on his shot. He wouldn't do it. And yesterday was the proof. They fouled him. He kept missing free throws. And basically for every possession, the Sixers scored 1 point. And Doc Rivers, I'm just going to play this, and I'm going to explain to you why this is really problematic. Doc Rivers, trying to channel his inner Daryl Morey, who is now his boss, came out to the little Zoom press conference. Man, he looked miserable. I'm up at Stanford at CBS Sports HQ in the control room, so I have all this technology. And Doc sits down, and he just looked like someone whose pet had just passed away. I mean, it was a terrible, and I say that as someone whose pet just passed away, so that's why I can reach to that. It's not insensitive. I'm still dealing with that. And Doc Rivers showcased his inability to grasp the finer points of, I don't know, playoff basketball when he tried to explain why Ben Simmons being unable to hit free throws isn't a big deal.
Analytically, if you split all those free throws offensively, you'll take a point per possession, you know? So he did that. I had no issues with it. Obviously, we loved him and made them both. But I didn't think that changed the game at all for us. So I was fine with it. You know, if he had to miss both, then that's something. But overall, I was fine with it. Obviously, that's what they're going to do. That's what they should do. And we're fine with that.
This is like when you're talking to someone who you really think is bright, and they say something like, yeah, you know, Ohio definitely touches Nebraska. And you think, I don't think it does. No. And then like that guy's wife's like, I'm a geography professor. Ohio definitely touches Nebraska. And you're sitting there at the party thinking, I mean, I'm from Iowa. I'm pretty sure Nebraska's to the, and they're just insisting. You just realize I'm bad at geography. I thought I was an expert at geography in the Midwest. And then you get home and you open the map up and you're like, who the hell are these idiots? He's tenured? She's tenured? That's what I felt like, because I'm sitting in the control room. He says that. I'm with a few guys, and someone goes, oh, that's interesting. And I go, I don't think that's right. And they're like, that's interesting. I go, no, that's because the way that offensive and defensive rating work, which is the actual statistics you should look at when evaluating basketball teams, is how many points a team gets offensively or gives up defensively per 100 possessions. So even a moron like me, I'm not good at math. 4 times 3 plus 5, 112. I don't know. But I can tell you this. If you're getting 1 point per possession, right, you're making 1 out of 2 free throws, and it's per 100 possessions, then your offensive rating would be 100. And I'm sitting there thinking, an offensive rating of 100 I don't think is very good. And I say this out loud, and some of my colleagues go, are you sure? And I go, I'm pretty sure. Well, let's just go to the old Google machine, shall we? Doc Rivers just, I'm making this up. You just heard him say that you'll take it every time analytically. Okay, let's just go to the top offensive rated team in the NBA. This year. Let's just see how that's going. Oh, it's the Brooklyn Nets. They scored 119 points per 100 possessions. Well, that's more than 100. Let's go to the very last team. It's the Oklahoma City Thunder. 104.32 points per possession. Literally, Doc Rivers doesn't know what he's talking about. Literally has no clue what he's discussing. And this isn't like we're at that MIT Sloan analytics thing where everyone's like, well, that's why I think you carry the two and you win basketball games. By the way, analytics has a lot of value. This is a guy explaining tactically why he left Ben Simmons in at the end of a close game when Embiid went down, and if he doesn't return, there's at least a chance the Wizards are going to push you and make life miserable. And his decision-making was predicated on the fact that analytically, you'll take that every time. Every time? You literally want to be a G League team? Like, that's the goal? So I'm going to adjust what I said yesterday. I said that the entire NBA postseason was going to be impacted in a historical way by injuries. And that's true. but let's also add by coaches who don't know what they're doing. Pressure is a weird and crazy thing. It's a bizarro thing. I have seen markedly more talented people than me in the various professions that I've had, right? Radio host, television analyst, sports writer. I'm not making this last one up. I've seen people choking this too. Checker at Walmart. Just crumble under the pressure when the pressure comes. Whatever the reason, Doc Rivers doesn't know in an elimination game that Ben Simmons making half of his free throws, and by the way, he made half in that game, 5 of 11, 5 of 20 in the series. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He was really locked in, so he's making half of them. Okay, fine, he's locked in, he's making half of them. Doc Rivers doesn't know that that is not an effective strategy for success, which explains why Doc Rivers never comes up with effective strategies for success. I think Philly's in trouble. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Want to get into Naomi Osaka. And I think what is a very difficult and nuanced conversation, she has withdrawn from the French Open. And I have a series of perspectives on this that are not going to fit easily into whatever sort of peg you think it should go into. Why Osaka's decision is both right and wrong, and why the evaluation of athletes and whether they should talk to the media is more complicated than I'm on her side or she's wrong. It is harder than that. And we're going to do what Doc Rivers can't and explain it properly next year on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Happy Tuesday, Bill Writer with you. Remember, this weekend on CBS, the next stop on the PGA Tour features several of the top players in the world, including Justin Thomas, DeChambeau, Fowler, and McIlroy competing at the Memorial Tournament. Live golf coverage begins Saturday. That's 3 Eastern, noon for those of you out on the West Coast on Pacific Time on CBS.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Including producer underscore Tom. Just chilling in LA. A couple weeks just working from sunny California. 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. We'll do MLB Power Rankings in a little bit. We'll get to Mr. Bogish, who, by the way, sources tell me, and by sources I mean Andrew, has a review of Friends. Very excited. So, Naomi Osaka, who is the number 2 women's tennis player in the world, the highest earning female athlete in the last 12 months at around $55 million, and connected to and therefore aggressively covered by both the United States, where she was raised, and Japan, under whose flag she plays for. Has withdrawn from the French Open. We discussed this yesterday. My perspective at the time, which hasn't shifted, is that she has obligations to her job and that they need to be met. And her response to not just the French Open, but the four Grand Slams, saying you will do this or we will potentially exclude you from these major tournaments, is that she's walked away. Now, there's a lot of context you have to have here, I think, because she has framed it, and I think it's a brave... All the things I'm going to say are true, even though some of them are in conflict with each other. It is true that Osaka was brave enough to talk about her depression and how that has kicked in as she has had to face the media. It is true that 3 years ago, you and I didn't know who she was, and that she was remarkably, she has become remarkably, remarkably famous overnight. It is true that, you know, I'm on the radio, I do TV, no one knows who I am. It's rare that I've ever been recognized. And I'm a pretty extroverted, outgoing guy. I'm pretty social, fairly comfortable in my own skin, right? I would hate to be famous. And I've talked about this, hanging out with actual famous people is miserable. I can't imagine what that would be like if you have a level of social anxiety. It's also true that her sister put out a statement that she shouldn't have, saying very, very clearly that the real problem Osaka had was that people saying she's not good on clay made her doubt herself. And here's some breaking news. People are going to be critical of you. That's part of being a professional athlete. It's also true that she's chosen a career in which she's an entertainer. And it's equally true that she needs to meet her obligations. And I think lastly, it's worth saying that it is a power play on her part in response to a very ham-fisted power play by those four tournaments. And let me throw in that the guy that is the head of the French Open at Roland Garros idiotically and hypocritically came out, spoke only in French, made a statement, and then wouldn't take questions. I mean, there's no good guys here. And I don't think there's any bad guys either. I have sympathy for Osaka, and I am so frustrated by all the culture warriors on both sides of these debates out there trying to take the Osaka argument situation and all of its nuance and complications and make it some righteous flagpole with which to raise the banner for some topic that isn't even under discussion here. This is only about Osaka and depression and the difficulty of having to deal with those things in careers where they come out. And I'll just be really honest with you. I have trouble relating to... I don't know what that's like. I think I said this yesterday. I know that depression is widespread. I know that anxiety is widespread. I don't suffer from either of those things. I know that makes me very, very fortunate. And I have loved ones and friends who have crippling levels of depression and anxiety. I have a friend, good friend, who, when I used to live in a walking city, she would walk to work, right? Where I would walk to work and I would see her and we'd walk to work together. And several times we'd be halfway to work, a long walk, and she would just sit down and refuse to go. It was so, and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know she was having an anxiety attack, a panic attack. She would go back to her house, get in her car, and drive. Once we made it two blocks from work, I'm like, all right, see you later. So there are people who have a lot of trouble functioning in the world, and I understand that. But that's not limited to Naomi Osaka. And so the notion that anyone thinks that Osaka should live up to her obligations, doesn't take mental health seriously, is insulting. And anyone who doesn't have sympathy for Osaka and want to have a conversation about the nuances and difficulties of functioning in the world is also an idiot. All of these things are true. I don't have an easy answer. I don't think there's an easy answer. I have remarkable sympathy for Osaka. I also think that there's something to the notion that if she was so cripplingly, and again, it's not my world. I don't have anxiety and depression, but she obviously could function in all the ways except for visiting with the media. So do you scrap all media obligations for all athletes if one out of 100 can't do it? And how do you navigate those people who are not being forthcoming and honest? And that's not Osaka, but if you blaze this trail, there will be athletes who don't talk to the press. And let me say this too, because as a member of the media who goes to events, your natural and I think fair reaction would be Ryder just wants to have access to these people. And let me tell you a dirty little secret about me that I've never told my bosses. I think press conferences are stupid. They're so dumb that I don't know that I've asked more than four questions in my career at a press conference, ever. And the higher magnitude of attention on a press conference, the stupider it becomes. So when I covered the Miami Heat, they would bring out LeBron, Bosch, and Wade to always be in front of a microphone. And I did not ask a single question of any of those guys in that setting after the first few days because I realized that it was theater. It was like the thing I hated most about being in college. I loved college. I loved it. I loved the drinking. I loved being away from my parents, and I loved the learning. I did. It was an amazing experience. But I couldn't stand going to some class where I was interested in the material and some wannabe intellectual raising his hand to ask the professor a question and then giving a 15-minute speech or a 30-second speech that felt like 15 minutes. And that's exactly what these press conferences are like. By out of principle, out of sheer principle, I don't ask questions at these things. And I had a lot of colleagues who've been around me over the years when I got a radio show who were like, well, how the hell do you talk on the radio? You're so shy and quiet. Like, I'm not shy and quiet. I just think what you guys do in those press conferences is stupid and meaningless. And like, how many of us have, hey, how'd it go today? Good win, right? Oh, we need one more of those? Hey, coach, what'd you think about missing the free throws? No one asked interesting questions. Now, occasionally I'd ask because I would work around colleagues who didn't have the courage to ask the tough question, right? Sometimes something would happen and you'd have to ask it. Hey, random player, not on the Clippers. You wore an adult diaper today at the playoffs. Was that difficult? Sometimes you gotta ask those questions. So that's the other irony, is that there's no value. There really isn't any value in the way press conferences are set up. But here's another fact that was true before the pandemic. So I was a political reporter, and I covered homelessness. I covered a lot of things before sports early in my reporting career. And I had to work from an office, or I was supposed to work from an office. I would constantly lie to my bosses, tell them I was doing something, just work from my house. I didn't like being in the office. I got a lot more done. When I became a sports writer, the culture of sports writing is you don't go into the office as a newspaper writer. I just worked from home. So pre-pandemic, I was utterly convinced, and I would tell friends of mine, you should work from home. And friends who had anxiety, as I'd become more aware of this, were like, oh my God, what I wouldn't give not to have to go into the office. I get so much more done. Just because something doesn't have value, just because it's done by rote, whether it's a press conference or whether it's having to go to the office, just because something is stupid, and stupid is an oversimplification, just because something may not be the best use of time doesn't mean you get to skip it because you don't like doing it. I have so much sympathy for Osaka. But I've also got a sympathy for all the colleagues out there before the pandemic who don't like getting on the train or being in traffic or talking to people at the office, who wake up, I can't imagine what this is like, in the morning and are so sad and depressed they don't want to get out of bed. Do you know what they do? They get out of bed or they get fired, as I understand it. It's complicated. But please, let's not make Osaka a martyr or a bad guy. She's none of those things. She's a human being that's grappling with something difficult, and those difficulties are real, and that doesn't make her immune from her obligations. That doesn't make her infallible, and that doesn't make her some avatar for whatever cause you want to sell in this divided country. It's a complicated deal. She has obligations. They're contractual. They're part of the job. Everyone else in her world has to do them. She should do them, and I understand why she doesn't want to. That's it. That's the deal. I feel so bad for her. And I'm sure the catch-22 of this for her is she did not intend. Forget taking attention away from tennis. All this has done is focus attention on her that's going to make her more anxious. And as I understand anxiety, you can become paralyzingly anxious thinking about being anxious, right? It becomes a spiral, apparently. So this isn't, she's not faking. Again, it's not, she's not doing the performance theater. And I don't want to criticize every sport. There are some great sports journalists out there. There's some, actually, on the drive back from Stamford, Connecticut last night, when a drunk driver crashed into a median, that person was fine, then tried to drive away. My Uber driver goes, that guy's drunk. I'm like, what, does that happen a lot? Oh, yeah. I was listening to a tennis podcast because I wanted to hear what the international tennis, I never listened to tennis podcasts, said about Osaka. And they had deep sympathy. And one of the guys that was at a press conference talked about asking questions. He sounded like a pretty reasonable guy. I'm going to pick on some people here. J.A. Donde has done nothing in my career. I don't know J.A. that well. Does nothing but ask incredibly insightful questions at press conferences, right? He's the exception to what I believe to be mostly a useless deal. And there's a guy who works at the AP in Miami who's the opposite. I would argue his questions are sycophantic and, subtract from the sum of all human joy. I can never get that time back. Jeff Passan, who I know a little bit, and I haven't been at a lot of stuff, but I've been at some World Series, asks incredibly insightful questions. Ken Rosenthal, same thing. So it's not every journalist. It's not every journalist. And I do get angry when people just attack journalists because it's so easy. Presidents, athletes. I mean, it's just, it's so hypocritical. Can you imagine if I came on the radio and said every athlete's stupid or every athlete is a jerk or every athlete is spoiled? That A, it would be bogus, and B, it's not even remotely true. Human beings are complicated. I guess I'll end here. I'm wishing Osaka well. I hope things work out for her. I hope she comes back to tennis. And to all of you that deal with this, right, and have to go to work. And it's about wealth and power too, right? I'm sure I live in a very wealthy area in LA. I'm sure there's people with anxiety who are multimillionaires who don't want, you know. But most of us work for a living. And so you have my sympathy as well. I don't think there's good guys. I don't think there's bad guys, except for the people trying to pretend that there are. All right, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. On that really happy note, let's talk about the show Friends. Apparently, Bogus finally watched a TV show. What about a Friends-Marvel crossover, right? Like, there's time travel, and Thor and Loki go back and hang out with Ross and Joey. Just chew on it if you're a Hollywood producer out there. Just think about it.
I mean, there are other apartments in that building. I'm sure one comes up for rent every once in a while. Mm. Throw Thor and Loki in there and see what happens.
Let's see what happens. Things are going to get crazy.
So you never know.
This is not an actual television show, right? This is not, it's not fictionalized, not Joey shows.
No.
All right, what is this stupid thing?
So, I mean, it's definitely a vanity piece. They're all behind it. It was all their idea. They go back to the set and they sit around, they reminisce, they intersperse clips of the old show. They do some table reads of the more famous scenes from the series. There are interviews with guest stars, with people who love the show growing up, celebrities now. That's why I mentioned David Beckham and Jon Snow to you guys in my text the other day about it. If they like it, I don't know how you guys don't like it.
Jon Snow's in it.
Jon Snow is in it, yeah. Yeah. Kit Harington, I think is his real name. But he's there talking about how much he loved Friends as a younger man. What else did they do? And then there's a James Corden interview that also gets woven into it as well. So it's like 90 minutes of present day stuff and behind the scenes recap stuff.
No one's in character at any point.
I mean, when they're doing the table read, I guess they technically are because they're reading the script as if they were doing it in that moment, but they're not on set full acting.
If I want to use my imagination, I'll read a book. I got Dickens on the shelf. I want them to actually like walk around. No? It's good? It sounds terrible. It sounds awful.
Well, but it's about the audience. I liked the show, so I thought they did a good job. You don't like the show, so you're not going to be open-minded about it.
I like the show. Misinformation.
You didn't like Friends, as you said on Friday.
I said it wasn't amazing. It was fine.
Well, I thought it was amazing, so I thought the reunion was well done.
It's like a Caesar salad at the airport. It's safe. You know it's going to be okay.
No,
it's not going to change your world.
No.
It's not going to make you sick.
No. You don't like it. It's fine. You don't have to like it, but you're not going to like the reunion then.
Of all that, we've asked you to watch Citizen Kane. We've asked you to watch the Marvel movies, you know?
I've watched plenty of Marvel movies for entertainment / this show. But this, yes, wow. This jumps
Friends.
The line because I like Friends better than I like Loki. Sorry.
Can you name the actor who played Joey?
Matt LeBlanc.
Okay.
It's not hard.
How about Ross?
David Schwimmer.
Because you just watched. You wouldn't have been able to do it a week ago. You wouldn't have known these guys' names.
Absolutely would have been.
All right.
100%.
Matt LeBlanc, he looked a little different than 25 years ago.
Yeah, well, he's gained some weight, but Matthew Perry was the worst. Matthew Perry has lived a tough life since Friends, and I think during Friends, too, and it's taken its toll. He looks a little beat up these days, unfortunately.
Has anyone gotten more chances to do bad television shows they've anchored than that dude? I just, like, show after show came out every year that he was in. I can't even remember what they were about.
Well, and I think Matt LeBlanc is working right now.
Really?
On CBS TV, a show that I guess exists.
Oh, on CBS. Oh, it's excellent.
On CBS.
It's owned by the company that pays me. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, I know.
So good. It's
and
funny
I,
when
I
he talks.
I don't know anything about it.
When he speaks, I always laugh. So good. Words. All right, well, I guess we can just agree that that's the friend. I mean, you watch them sit around a table and read scripts of a show you could just watch instead when they're younger?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I did.
I'm riveted. you know what? I was going to walk around Central Park today in New York. I'm going to actually go to a coffee shop, and I'm going to watch the Friends thing. That's what I'm going to do.
I mean, that would be perfect in a coffee shop.
I'm pretty – oh, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What part of New York did they live in? I'll go there. Do you know?
I mean, the building was near us, where you are right now. You can walk to the apartment building. It's close. It's in that area. It's in the West Village. I don't know if that's like technically where it was on the show, but that's where the physical building, the exterior shots were.
I can walk to the exterior building, and I could watch the Friends thing.
Yeah, I mean, back in normal times, I would walk from our studio to the train, and I would often pass tour groups who were standing outside taking shots of their apartment building.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to watch the incredibly riveting Citizen Kane-esque comedy that Matt LeBlanc is in on CBS, which I can't get enough of. I'm very excited. I'm gonna do it carefully, though, because I laugh so hard sometimes I can't stand. So if there's not a place to sit, it could be dangerous.
Careful.
I mean, Viacom, CBS, that show's amazing. I'm now going to let you do an update while I plot my path to the Friends building.
Well, again, thank you for the time to express my friends' love. The Wizards were in an 0-3 hole because they couldn't stop Joel Embiid. They survived game 4 last night because Embiid left after the first quarter with a sore right knee. They had to pounce, said Bradley Beal.
We had our work cut out. You know, we understand that Joe was out, and, you know, we're uncertain of how it is moving forward, but we took advantage of what was on the floor, and we executed.
Beal scored 27 in the 122-114 season-extending win. Game 5 in Philly tomorrow night. Embiid scheduled for a precautionary MRI today. The Jazz taking a 3-1 lead back to Salt Lake City after a 120-113 victory in Memphis. Utah's now 3-for-3 since Donovan Mitchell returned from his ankle injury. He had 30 last night. Anthony Davis reportedly likely to miss Game 5 in Phoenix tonight with his groin strain. But here's the good news for the Lakers. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope should play after sitting Sunday with a sore knee. Playoff hockey, the Canadiens taking Game 7 in Toronto 3-1, completing their comeback from a 3-1 hole. So the Leafs still have not won the Stanley Cup since 1967. Montreal starts round 2 tomorrow night in Winnipeg. And the Islanders earning a split in Boston 4-3 in OT. The game winner from Casey Cizikas, who hadn't scored since April 1st. Let's get to Dodger Stadium, where Chris Taylor refused to make an out.
3-2 to Chris Taylor, and the pitch. Fly ball right center field. That is going to the wall. And 3 runs will score.
Charlie Steiner on Dodgers Radio. Taylor's 3-run double, bottom 6, on the 14th pitch of his at-bat. 2 different times he fouled off 4 consecutive pitches. LA a 9-4 win over St. Louis to snap a 3-game skid. The Mets beat the Diamondbacks 6-2. New York's won 5 in a row. Arizona has dropped 14 of 15. The Royals beat the Pirates 7-3. KC back at 500 after winning 10 of 16. And it's day 3 at the French Open. Top seed Ash Barty needed 3 sets to beat American Bernarda Pera. Rafael Nadal is on court right now, just 3 games in his first round match. Bill, back to you.
Bogus, we were talking Doc Rivers. I just got a stat from the researchers at CBS Sports HQ on a question I asked yesterday. Would you like to hear how bad Doc Rivers is at his job? Just to reinforce how bad he is at his job, given the fact that he said that Simmons' free throw shooting, not a problem.
So he's worse than a Caesar salad at an airport?
I mean, dude, the Caesar salad is the safe, mediocre. Yeah, he is.
Okay.
He's getting sushi at the non-sushi place at the airport. Like, it could taste good, but the odds that everything goes badly are very, very high. Now, the series isn't over, but if Ben Simmons were to finish the series where he's at free throw shooting wise, which is 5 of 20, 25%, it would be the third worst free throw shooting in a playoff series in NBA history with a minimum of 20 free throw attempts. Ben Wallace, Shaquille O'Neal. Only worse. Mm. And only one time was Shaq that bad. He's like Friends. Just leave in the past. He is Andrew Bogus. You had Andrew Bogus. Yeah, little Friends. Little
one last shot.
Friends slander on the end there, buddy. Actually, you know, Friends is fine. At Andrew Bogus on Twitter. We'll talk to him in an hour. MLB Power Rankings next here on CBS.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Yeah, Sports Radio.
Some will rise. Others will fall.
My great hero.
Let the ranking begin. On Writer Than You's MLB Power Rankings. Number 5.
I suppose we've reached the point now where we have enough of a sample size that whatever we've seen is real. And so whatever we expected from the Boston Red Sox, whatever we thought were going to be the doldrums yet again for that organization, the reality is they have one of the best offenses in baseball. They are a perennial winner this season, and they are not to be trifled with. And what's interesting about where they're at, and we'll get to Tampa Bay in a little bit, both of those teams don't look to me on paper like actual contenders. And you look at the Red Sox in particular, it's hard to see how they're going to win a best of anything series with that pitching staff. But you know what? They are they're winning baseball games. They're getting on base. J.D. Martinez has returned to form. And I'm done doubting them. I'm just going to, from here on in, when they're on this list, give them the respect, nod my head, let them do their thing, and move on.
Number 4.
Even though this is a great thing, one of the things I love about sports and about life is that you can rise above your circumstances. You can be better than your limitations. And if you're the Chicago White Sox, and your manager is, how do I say this, really bad at his job, but excellent at isolating an entire clubhouse and not understanding how the game works today, you can still be really, really good. These guys are 12 games over 500, and we knew the White Sox were going to be excellent this year. They're by far the best team in Chicago, and that's a Cubs organization, not on this list, that has overachieved this season. Love what the White Sox are about. Love what they're doing. I don't think Tony La Russa is a good manager anymore. And I think he's a perfect example that bad managers on talented teams can have success. Great managers can take them to the next level. In-game decision-making and the ability to sort of navigate the emotions of the postseason could be a problem. We're not there. We're in this 162-game marathon. And over the course of this, the White Sox are the fourth fastest, best team so far.
Number 3.
Now things get really difficult because the team I'm going to put here, I think, is the best team in baseball. I do. At the end of the year. But the Dodgers have a number of injuries, and they've had some issues with some of their pitchers of late. Clayton Kershaw, two of his last three outings, have been lackluster in the extreme. And I'm not going to freak out and pretend that Kershaw sucks or he's gotten old. I've seen this before, but it's slightly disconcerting. And Trevor Bauer was fine last night against a Cardinals team. That's good. Gave up 4 runs. Only 3 were earned. I think 6 in the third. He just didn't look particularly sharp. They're still missing Corey Seager. Cody Bellinger hasn't reclaimed that MVP-level form. And yet, they're loaded in the extreme, as was showcased by Gavin Lux. Yet another one of these dudes they bring up through their system, comes up to the majors, struggles for 4 days, and then looks like he's been playing and hitting major league fastballs and pitching for his entire career. The Dodgers are too deep not to be great, but they've lost a lot of guys, and at least for the moment, that's why they've dropped.
Number two.
I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure Tampa Bay has won 1,000 of the last 1,001 games. This organization's amazing. When Andrew Friedman left to go run the Dodgers, it felt like he was the genius, he was the guy. And I think he's a remarkable, not even a GM, president of baseball operations. But this organization has obviously built a culture around their sabermetrician approach. And again, like, you look at their roster, you look at who's on this team, it just doesn't feel like a ball club that should be beating the big boys and dominating baseball. But that's exactly what they've done. Tampa Bay would be the best team in baseball if it wasn't for
number one.
I mean, the Padres, man. And we've been on this show. Not that it's difficult to be on the fact that the Padres and the Dodgers are going to be two of the three best teams in baseball. Just got the wrong American League East team that was going to be in the mix with them. Padres have the best pitching staff in the game. They score a ton of runs. Unlike La Russa, you can just tell that clubhouse would run through multiple walls for their manager. And he's hurt now. But you've got guys like Trent Grisham who have been revelations and not the superstars. You've got young dudes that are absolutely maniacally talented. They're joyous. And you go back to what that front office did. When they gave Manny Machado all that money, it felt perplexing, right? It was like, why are you spending money in the small market? But Machado, who's not even the third most important player on that team, was a touchstone, was the beginning, the starting line of an organization that's not the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Astros or the Cubs, that had created a farm system worthy of competition in the majors and then mixed it with the willingness to spend money. And that works when you're as well-run as San Diego is. They're the best team in baseball. They're the most joyous team to watch in baseball. And they have a real chance. And I got it. The NL West is brutal. Haven't even gotten to the Giants. Not going to do honorable mentions this year because we're out of time. It's going to be a long haul to win that division. But you win the NL West, or you're the wild card of the NL West, you got to win that one game. The Padres are good enough to win the whole thing this year. They're not the only team that are good enough. I know it's baseball. And when you get into postseasons, rhythm, sample sizes shorten, momentum, a little bit of luck matters. But man, that's a very, very good team. This week's Power Rankings were brought to you by Credit Karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. Instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. It is weird being on the East Coast. You East Coasters know, and I used to live here, they say LA makes you soft. It does, even in your sports viewing. Last night, I'm at the CBS Sports HQ headquarters up in Stamford, Connecticut, and I know of the NBA schedule, and the first game gets done, and I just turn to somebody, I go, my God, it's 9:00 at night. We still have a game to go? You poor bastards out here. It's brutal. I don't know. I don't have a good solution. You can't start the games earlier. You know, there'll be 3:00 in the afternoon out west. Brutal. All right, let's talk to my guy, Mark Medina. He's up next to talk some hoops here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Happy Tuesday. Bill Ryder with you, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. When you need someone to navigate a loan I can't. See? Just like that. What is less reliable? Technology when I'm around it, as we effort Mark Medina, or Anthony Davis in the playoffs? It's a very, very close call. Do you know on some movies they have highfalutin fancy pieces of technology that you push a button and then all the technology goes down, like EMPs or something? I'm a human version of that. Just bring me into your house and your computer will be broken within 3 hours. But Pete Bilotti has fixed it. And that means Mark Medina is with us now. The remarkably talented, hardworking, excellent national NBA writer, guru for USA Today, based on the West Coast in beautiful Los Angeles, California, where I'm normally based out of. I'm in New York right now. Mr. Medina, hey, buddy.
Hey, how you doing? Come back to LA. We miss you.
I'm ready. Actually, it's nice to be in New York, but they have this thing called rain, Mark, that I'm not accustomed to.
Oh, yeah. People in LA don't respond well to that. They usually get in accidents.
They do. It sprinkles, and people just drive into medians. They just like...
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's infuriating, because I'm not one of those guys. You know, I'm East Coaster. I know what the brutal winters are like, so I got to get these guys in gear.
If memory serves, Mark G underscore Medina on Twitter, G for great. You're a Philly guy, right? Is that your sort of where you're from?
Not quite. A York, Pennsylvania guy, okay. But York's not really on the map, but I'm trying to put it on there.
I upgraded you to Philly.
Southern Central PA, closer to the Maryland border.
Absolutely magical place. I've never stepped foot in. Mark Medina here on the show. I can't even talk, can't even say your name. So what do we know about Anthony Davis? Where are things at with the Lakers star?
Yeah, the Lakers wish they knew more. They are just listing him as questionable as of now for tonight. He had an MRI that basically confirmed what we already know. He has a strained left groin, but I would be very surprised if he plays tonight, because just here's historical reference with the caveats that, hey, everybody's responds differently. We don't know if it's the exact nature of this injury, but when LeBron James strained his left groin his first season with the Lakers, he wound up missing 27 combined games. So this is a serious injury, no joke. I know things with the playoffs, it can change, but I just can't see him suiting up tonight, because it's a pretty big deal.
Mark Medina here on the program. Mark, it's been obviously a postseason defined by injuries or guys returning from injuries, and right in Donovan Mitchell's case, but critical guys either out or coming back from having been out. We just saw this in Philadelphia. We'll see what happens with Joel Embiid. It certainly has impacted this Suns-Lakers series on the other side of the equation, on the Phoenix side of the equation. Chris Paul looked a lot better in that last game. Any sense of what we can expect from him health-wise tonight?
Yeah, that's the thing that's playing out here, for better and for worse. I think it's obviously an encouraging sign that Chris is moving in the right direction. In the context of that Game 4 performance, Monty Williams was going to hold him out, because he thought his shoulder was getting a lot worse and he just didn't want to put him in a tough spot. Chris pleaded his case, he listened, and voila, he played really well. But here's the thing. This could play out the same way that played out with Anthony Davis in Game 3, where he had a left knee injury. He wound up getting it out, playing really well, and you think, okay, this guy's going to be able to play through this. So you don't want to discount that maybe things turn for the worse, but you never know. I mean, that's the tough thing with this series. The unfortunate part is that on both sides of the aisle, injuries have played a major factor in how each game has been decided, as opposed to just, hey, how are both teams executing on the floor?
Mark Medina on the show. Mark, I'm going to ask you some questions, and they're somewhat hypotheticals, but just hypothetically, if both the Suns and the Lakers were 100% healthy by the next round or the conference finals, which of these two teams, or maybe it's both teams, do you think are legitimate title contenders if Anthony Davis's groin is healed, if Chris Paul's shoulder gets better?
I think both of them are title contenders. In the West, completely, I would look at, assuming, again, clean bill of health, I would say the Utah Jazz, the Phoenix Suns, both LA teams are title contenders. I don't have the Denver Nuggets in the mix, because we know that we can't play with a hypothetical with Jamal Murray being out, because he's been ruled out for a while now. But they, you know, have had a ways of overachieving. But I would put it at those four teams, assuming that, you know, everyone's relatively healthy, at least available.
And hypothetical number two, which may not be a hypothetical, but let's just say that Anthony Davis is unable to play again in this series, and Chris Paul is the version of him that we saw in, you know, games two and three. He's out there, but he's not able to really impose his will. What's the better basketball team? Who's the favorite to win two of the next three?
Well, without a doubt, it's the Suns. I wouldn't discount the Lakers' ability to win the series, because LeBron James is LeBron James, and I know that they had a really ugly third quarter when Anthony Davis was out, but they rebounded really well in the fourth, and there is a template this season that when LeBron was on the floor and AD was out, there was some initial struggles. They started out 1-4, but then they won six of their next seven. And so I do trust that LeBron will elevate his game and he can elevate those around him. That's what makes him a great player. But if they're without Anthony Davis for the rest of the playoffs, I don't see the Lakers winning the championship. It's one thing to get out of the first round, you know, even against a good Phoenix Suns team. But to ask LeBron, I know he's done amazing things, but to almost single-handedly carry the team through the championship without a star teammate. I just don't see it.
Mark,
but,
you
never know.
Who do you think wins tonight?
I think it's going to be the Lakers. This might be bold, but I don't know if they will win the actual series. But if Anthony is out or if he's in, I could see this kind of being an adrenaline rush game where AD, I don't know if he would be dominant because he would be limited, but he would be one of those guys that, hey, he lays out on the line, he at least makes some sort of impact, and then everyone elevates their game. If he's out, same thing. But if he's out for the rest of the series, I would predict that the Suns wind up winning this one in seven.
Mark, we were having technical difficulties getting you on the air because I'm here and therefore the equipment won't work because I'm a technological curse. So you might not have heard this. At the start of the show, they have a little intro where they have me saying random things, including I like to admit when I'm wrong. So here's me being wrong. I made fun of, this will surprise you, I made fun of Ty Lue when he said how much easier it was going to be to go to Dallas and win games down 2-0, how it was just so much easier to win on the road. And I was wrong. Obviously, the Clippers turned things around. Luka Doncic not being right may or may not have played a significant role in that. That series has become really interesting. For you, are the Clippers the hands-down favorites going forward, or do you still like Dallas' chances to make a series of this thing?
I want to give the Clippers hands-down favorites. Obviously, they're in a much better position, but I would give them the edge only because, you know, they have home court now, and, you know, the capacity is increasing slowly but surely, and Luka Doncic's injury is a real deal. But I think if all things were equal and maybe Luka can show improvement with his health, I think it's a coin toss. But I think the encouraging thing with the Clippers is they showed remnants of their last year's identity in the first two games, and the fact that they withstood a 30-7 deficit at the beginning of the game and called their way back. You know, you can criticize them all they want, and they deserve it for why did you get in this hole in the first place. But the fact that they didn't completely wet the bed and they were able to recover and rectify their mistakes, yeah, I think it's a potential turning point.
Mark Medina from USA Today. Mark, I'll just do the Western Conference, even though it applies in the East as well. The number of injuries or question marks around guys' health that are shaping this postseason is stunning. We've talked about Anthony Davis and the Lakers. We've talked about Chris Paul and the Suns. You brought up Jamal Murray and Denver. I forgot at the start of the show, just because there's so many, to mention Luka Doncic and that series. If these injuries, and I think they will, continue to severely impact the postseason out West and to limit some teams that had real upside, is it the Clippers' world? Do you think Portland could be surprising? Like, how do things play out if all these injuries remain troubling for all these teams in the Western Conference?
Yeah, this is one of the reasons why I thought, you know, when I'm making predictions, I'm making them off of logic, but I wouldn't be comfortable enough throwing money on it because there's all these qualifiers, and injuries, unfortunately, have been, you know, a thing this year, even more so in recent seasons. And so I think, with all that, there is a feeling that everything's up for grabs. Now, I do think that there is clear separation between those four Western Conference teams I mentioned versus everyone else. I could see the Denver Nuggets sneaking in, even without Jamal Murray, because they've been so used to playing through adversity. Nikola Jokic, he got my MVP vote for a reason. He's been really consistent and available. And they just have a lot of good depth, a lot of good coaching. But with Portland, you know, Damian Lillard's always due to have a really good game at any given night. I just think, you know, the reason why I would give the Nuggets over the edge over Portland, not just to win the series, but as far as their championship chances, we've seen throughout the season that Damian Lillard's play might be enough to get them into the playoffs, but it hasn't been enough to develop consistent success, because even if he has the offensive support with CJ McCollum and Carmelo Anthony and there's a healthier front court with Nurkic, defensively they're a train wreck, and I just don't see how that can last long term through playoff series. Usually you need to use that as kind of your fallback plan when things go dicey.
And the Utah Jazz obviously lost that first game, did not have Donovan Mitchell. He comes back, he plays 25 minutes, he plays 29 minutes in his second game. He plays, I think he played 34, 35 last night and was, you know, fairly impressive if inefficient. Are the Utah Jazz for you now a more of a favorite? How do you evaluate them in a Western Conference that, again, has been utterly and totally marred by injury?
Yeah, I think if we're speaking right now, Utah would be the favorite to get out of the West because they're a lot healthier. But I think, you know, unfortunately, that is all going to be subject to change these next two playoff series, where you never wish injuries on anyone, even in our field where, you know, we're not necessarily tied to the stakes. But it's a reality, and I think you could see a scenario where, you know, if the Suns or the Lakers advance, they'll be able to get healthier with time because, you know, they'll have the days off in between games for their guys to get right. While maybe, you know, something happens with one of the Jazz's players, you never know. But as we're talking right now, because they're in a better state of health than the Lakers, than the Suns, and I think that they're a much more consistent, complete team than the Clippers, I would put them at the favorite to get to the finals.
Mark Medina from USA Today. I want, when you're on the show, for this to feel like it's a blank canvas for you. I want you to be able to paint a masterpiece in any direction you want. So if you would like to comment on Doc Rivers saying that scoring 1 point per possession in the context of Ben Simmons getting fouled and making every other free throw, if you'd like to just weigh in on Doc Rivers, I would argue factually misstated belief that a offensive rating of 100 is not what you'll take every time. I want to welcome you to that opportunity. But if you don't, it's like a G.I. Joe choose your own adventure. We could just talk about Embiid's injury. You take that whatever direction you want. Either Doc Rivers doesn't know what he's talking about or Joel Embiid injury concern. You choose.
Oh, I'm an open book. But as far as Ben Simmons goes, I think that you have to just be a strategist. And if he's not hitting the foul shots, you got to do what's right, even if it is Ben Simmons. But my hunch is that Doc was shooting that down not because he questioned the strategy, but my presumption is he felt like dealing with that through, you know, just whatever negative reaction could be of, you know, not necessarily alienated him, but just his confidence level dropping or something like that. The negatives of exposing the free throw line would be a lot less severe than that. But, you know, wound up being a factor in the game. But I think the biggest factor that you mentioned is Joel Embiid's injury and what it means moving forward. And there didn't seem to be a lot of clarity after the game on how severe that was. So you never want to discount it, especially when it comes to Joel's injuries, because he's had a lot of them.
It is disconcerting. All right, Mark, last one for you. I'm going to go to the Nets game tonight at beautiful Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and presumably they're going to win that game, and almost certainly they're going to win that series. So let me just jump ahead, if I can be disrespectful on accident, to the Boston Celtics. When we get to Nets-Bucks, for me, I think that's, at least for me, I think that's the likely winner that is represents the East, and with all respect to Philly. Who do you like in that series? Like, do you have a strong view Nets versus Bucks when we get to that one way or the other?
Yeah, I think... again, we were talking about health earlier. The health caveats aside for either team, I think that you can make a case for Nets, Bucks, or Sixers to get out of the field. And I think the rest of the field in the East, you know, there might be challenges here or there, but no one's getting to the finals beyond those three teams. But I would pick the Nets out of that group and in the head-to-head matchup with Milwaukee, because it's a simple answer. They just have a lot more star power, a lot more offensive punch. And even if they do have defensive deficiencies, their talent level and their chemistry is just so off the roof that it can make up for that. But I think, you know, where the Nets are vulnerable, you know, I know it's a cliche with the health and all that, but with the Nets, we've seen throughout the season that's been a serious thing. There's been so many overlapping injuries among their three stars with Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving. And while I don't think it's that big of a deal that they've only played, you know, seven games together before the playoffs started, you know, they are pretty fragile guys right now. And I wouldn't be surprised if another injury happens to any of those guys, especially to Harden and Durant, because of what we've seen this season. But as of now, they're healthy and available. So I would give it to Brooklyn to win it.
Mark Medina, it is a bizarro NBA postseason, but it's absolutely fascinating. And now I think we have a better handle on it because of your expertise. Appreciate you, buddy. We'll be reading you over at USA Today, and I will see you at the NBA Finals. I presume you'll be there wherever the hell those are going to be in a month.
Yeah, knock on wood. Let's hope we can make it happen.
All right, buddy. Thanks for making time, Mark.
All right, thanks so much, man.
See you, dude. There are a few things in life that are absolute. Death is one of them. Taxes is another one. And the NFL squeezing every last dollar out of its sport, even at the cost of its long-term health, is certainly another. We'll get into that next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
One of the things you learn as a parent, and really I learned professionally with athletes that I covered and politicians before that, is that you have to set boundaries. For example, when I was a very young reporter and I covered Bill Clinton.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter. Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Believe he was still president. Maybe it was just after his presidency, and he wouldn't do an interview with me. I went up to him at a urinal when he was using the bathroom to set the boundary. I'm everywhere. And that didn't go as well as it could have. But the point is, you got to set boundaries. Unfortunately, in this world, people will take and take and take and take, right? Recently, there was apparently, not in LA because we don't have weather or insects, a swarm, like locusts just everywhere, right? They consume. That's nature. So I shouldn't be surprised, even if it angers me, that the National Football League, having gone to a 17th game, which certainly runs the risk of creating injuries and watering down the product, and I'm aware how much money that's worth. I get it. I got it. I understand. But you have to think long-term as well. That the NFL, having not even undergone a season of 17 games, having not even assessed the impact physically on players or the ratings, or right, just how, is now looking to go to 18 games. They're already planning 18 games. I love the NFL. I love NFL Sundays. And I don't know what that magic line is that goes from every game feels so wildly significant that it matters in the extreme, and that reality pulls me in and keeps my attention held, I'm wrapped, where you cross that, and it's like, yeah, it's a game. Eh, I can miss it. Obviously, baseball's a whole different animal. I got it. 16, soon to be 17, soon to be 18 games is totally different than 162. It's totally different than if Robert Manfred, who would never do this because he's not good at his job, were to make it 154 like they used to do back in the day. I got it. NBA at 82, right? Feels like too many. And no sport is going to give away games, because the economics now of professional sports is that you can have, I'm talking to you, Robert Manfred, whole ballparks, beautiful ballparks in markets where baseball is going pretty well, empty, tons of the time. Looks like a scene from Major League, and still have it not resonate with the people in charge because they're printing money. Printing money. I work for CBS Sports. Our streaming operation, Paramount Plus, how I make my living, is robust, and I think we do a great job. I think CBS Sports HQ, which is a 24-hour sports network, is worth your time. And I love soccer now. I've been converted to soccer by the pandemic. But there's a lot of soccer. Like, every week, Paramount Plus announces some new league. Like, there are countries I didn't know existed in the world that we now broadcast the rights to their league. I'm pretty sure, and I have to look, that we broadcast the Wakanda Football League now. and other made-up countries. Because it's valuable. Because the ability to go and watch something live has a power. It resonates. A few weeks ago, there was nothing on. I don't remember what I was doing. There was no tennis. There was no basketball. There was nothing. Whatever time I was watching. And I found some random second-tier golf tournament that was on. And I don't watch a ton of golf. I'll watch golf. I'll watch the majors. I love Tiger. And I watched it. So I understand the NFL. I mean, the NFL's on the other end of the spectrum, right, of the Bavarian Football League or whatever we're talking about here, soccer league. I understand that there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on the line. I understand that some of my bitterness in an extra game or an extra two games, I have to watch two more Bears games a year and have that heartbreaking experience as a fan. But I do worry about the greed, about the locust mentality of those folks who should know better and not think long term. I think the NBA is an amazing product and it has a ways to go to capture a larger share of the market in this country. I do. I think it's an amazing product. I think a lot of times people who say it's not have ulterior motives that have nothing. I don't even have to think that. They tell me now. They have nothing to do with sports. But that's still a problem the NBA has to navigate. You know, you're not making moral assessments about your customers. You're trying to have customers, unfortunately. I think Major League Baseball is a beautiful, beautiful product. And I'm lucky in the sense that I'm a Cubs fan. I watch Cubs games. I wrote about the Kansas City Royals for several years here and there and covered their spring training. No Dayton Moore to a degree, right? My kids are born there. I have friends from Kansas City, so I like watching the Royals. That's not always fun these days, but still, I'm emotionally invested in that team. And I did drive time and midday radio in L.A. on the Dodgers radio network, and they owned us, so we would have, you know, Corey Seager would come on, Dave Roberts would come on, all these guys. I used to do radio shows from Dodger Stadium, and Dodgers fans are such kind. They're just such kind. I like Dodgers fans, so I'm emotionally invested in that team. I got three teams that I'm into. Before, it's like I like to watch Shohei Ohtani play. I like watching the Yankees because they're interesting. I like watching the Astros because I want to see them lose every single game for the rest of their existence. I'm sorry, Houston. It's how I feel emotionally. But I'm not most people. I'm also in the sports business. Baseball's not relevant outside of its market. So they've got work they've got to do. I think tennis is a great product. I love tennis. It's not a mainstream sport. I think soccer's on the rise. It does really well with young people. It's not a mainstream sport. The NFL owns this space. They are the king of that jungle, and they have been for a long time. But nothing's forever. Baseball was the national pastime. Boxing was the national pastime. Horse racing was the national pastime. Track and field was a national pastime. You just be careful. Every empire, including the National Football League, begins their decline the moment they stop worrying about it. And I just worry that 17 or 18 games, and where does this end? In the long term, not your problem, not my problem, I get it, lead to some consequences. Look at the NBA and just the slight tweak to the schedule, right? Not as much offseason, condense the schedule. Look at how much the domino after domino of injury that falls. We don't know the science in playing 18 regular season games. What if that's the difference between Patrick Mahomes being injured 30% more or not? Between Tom Brady being able to play till he's 43 versus 39. There's unintended consequences here. And the NFL should just be really, really careful. Just like Andrew Bogut should be careful when they release the alien info. Because I don't know when the UAP info comes out whether or not the people that were like rolling their eyes, not targeted, but there's flying crap all over the place, Bogut. There's UAPs, unidentified projectiles, that they just change the initial. Oh, it's a projectile. Well, in that case, I won't be worried that it's little green men. It's coming. I think June, right? Is that when the report comes out?
I think today. I thought June 1st.
Is that today?
I think so, yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm very ready. My bags are packed. The bomb shelter is stocked. We're ready to go.
I've been sending Tom and Andrew a series of news stories, credible news stories, with messages like the aliens are going to invade. How has that been received in the Bogut household?
Basically, with a shrug. Okay. I've tried to see if the kids care. They don't seem to be worried yet or right. Concerned with the pending doom of aliens taking us over.
Let me just give you this last thought, and we can move on to something else. I had dinner with Stuart Kovacs on Sunday, former producer of the show, JR Sports Brief's producer. And we were at John's. No, where did we go? We weren't at John's. That was last time. We went to Fonda, which is a nice little Mexican place in Chelsea. Excellent food, great margaritas. Someone may have had six of them. I'm not going to say. And
come on, stew.
Yeah. The blood orange is so good, though, when it hits your lips. I'll take another. I'm the guy that ordered. One shows up, and I'm like, that took 10 minutes to get. Make another, please. And the waitress is like, what? I'm like, just, I'll order another. But you have a full one. I drink quickly. You bring them slowly. Let's work on this together. But I digress. And I was talking to Stu about aliens. And Stu's usually like, meek is the wrong word. Polite, introverted, not a lot of eye contact, right? Not a lot of exerting his will in the conversation. He's a great listener. And I brought this up, and he looked up. He locked eyes. His whole demeanor changed. And he said, it's going to be interesting. Now, there's a theory out there that Stu's an alien. And I'm just telling you, my takeaway was, be ready. It's my takeaway.
I do think Stu is speaking from knowledge. I think he knows what's coming and knows it'll be interesting. So those were as foreboding as Stu can be.
I can't tell if the five blood orange margaritas and the one hibiscus margarita that the waitress sort of convinced. It was interesting. Had me seeing clearly or unclearly, but there was some fear. There was some fear. Just be ready.
I mean, if Stu's worried, we should all be worried, I guess.
Be ready when Stu's our overlord, and we're all Raiders fans. The Raiders are the only team that gets to play in the NFL. Right. Oh, boy. I need a hibiscus margarita. It's only 11:30, and I need one. I'm very excited about the update. Are we going to slip any? Is there some tennis in there?
Of course there's tennis.
All right. Is there some friends in there?
There is no friends, LeBlanc? No friends references. No, nothing like that. I'm not that clever.
Is Joey LeBlanc a real thing, or did I combine a fictional character and a real character?
That's his first name on the show and his last name in real life.
Joey LeBlanc. I like him. I like half the real, half the fake. That's my favorite version of that guy. Can't wait to watch the table reading of Friends from 30 years ago. Does anyone do the laugh track so it really just grates on your nerves? Does anyone go, ha, 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 just, you know, in the background?
No. Okay. They laugh because it's funny, and I laughed because it was funny. No laugh track was needed.
Understood. I apologize to you and to Stu and to our alien overlords.
You don't mean any of that.
That is correct.
All right, here comes your update. It's sponsored by Credit Karma Money. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. The man in Boston who threw a water bottle at Kyrie Irving gets arraigned today on a felony charge of assault. And last night, a nonviolent idiot ran out of the floor in D.C. and jumped and slapped the backboard before being tackled by security. Doc Rivers, not sure what's going on.
I don't know what's going on with these fans right now. I just don't. You know, I don't want to get involved in it. We just got to have safety.
Rivers Sixers losing this game in Washington last night, 122-114, failing to sweep the Wizards. Joel Embiid made an early exit with right knee soreness after a first quarter fall, a precautionary MRI today. The Jazz feeling good up 3-1 on the Grizz after a 120-113 final in Memphis. 30 more points from Donovan Mitchell, 24 off the bench from Jordan Clarkson. Tonight, the Nets can close out the Celtics in Game 5. The Blazers and Nuggets break their 2-2 tie, as do the Lakers and Suns. Anthony Davis reportedly likely to miss this one with that groin strain. The Toronto Maple Leafs still have not won a playoff series since 2004. They dropped Game 7 at home to the Canadiens last night 3-1, completing their collapse from a 3-1 series lead. Leafs star Austin Matthews scored just once in the series.
I'm not really sure how to sum it up. It's obviously extremely frustrating. Just all around.
The Canadiens start round two tomorrow night in Winnipeg. The Islanders fought off the Bruins last night 4-3 in OT in Boston for a 1-1 series. Baseball last night, the Mets pushed their win streak to 5, 6-2 in Arizona. Jacob deGrom, 6 shutout innings. His 0.71 ERA is the lowest by a starter through May since 1964. some salary cap moves in Buffalo today. The Bills turning Stephon Diggs' $11.7 million salary into a signing bonus, which creates almost $8 million in cap space. The Bills, one of the teams linked to tight end Zach Ertz, whom the Eagles are trying to move. And here we go, checking on day three at the French Open. Top seed Ash Barty and American Jen Brady have won already today. Rafael Nadal racing to a 6-3, 5-2 lead on Alexei Popperin, and Venus Williams serving 3-5 first set against the 32 seed Ekaterina Alexandrova. Bill, back to you.
Bogus, I have a question and I have a story for you. My question is, I want to know what this says about me. I'm in New York yesterday. I'm in a full suit because I got to go up to the Stanford headquarters, and I decide to take the train up to Stanford. So I get in the subway. It's only three or four stops because it's the express, and it's crowded and it's hot and it's noisy and I'm crammed in around people and everyone's miserable, and I was so happy to be on the train. I was just like overjoyed. It smelled vaguely like the building I'm in now, which is not necessarily a wonderful smell. Yes. But I was so happy. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, it means you're not from New York, because I'm not looking forward at all to be back on the train.
Loved it.
Crowded, smelly, hot. Like, that's not fun. I do not miss that. The subway in and of itself, okay. Crowded subway, no thank you.
Could it be that I'm strong and you're weak, or is that the wrong read?
And that's always on the table.
No, yeah, it's sure. Not. That was mean. All right, here's my other story. Super proud of my son, Henry. This is like just proud dad moment. So he's into Star Wars right now. And Lori went to wake him up for school. And he wouldn't get up, and she's shaking him. And he pulled the blanket down and said, "This is not the Henry you're looking for," and waved his hand. And apparently thought it was going to work. It didn't. He's at school. But I love that kid's effort. Love that kid's effort.
Trying.
Andrew Bogus, looking forward tomorrow to seeing you, to talking to you, and to getting your reaction when Stu announces at a press conference that he is the ambassador of the aliens. Good seeing you.
And we're meeting for drinks tomorrow if Stu lets us. Is that happening as well?
You want to come to the city for drinks?
Sure.
I've got to go to the Knicks game.
Time.
Well, let's do it. I'm in. All right, so I got to go to the Knicks game. I got to do, for CBS Sports HQ, a pregame and a postgame. So I think Knicks Hawks is tomorrow at 7 Eastern. So let's say with TV timeouts and stuff, 9:15. I'll be done by 9:45, maybe 10. Did you want to meet near the Garden at 10 and have a drink?
Yeah, definitely after the game. And I'll just stay awake all night after we hang out. And I'll just go right back to work on Thursday morning.
So I'll say this, a little awkward, but like, let's become best friends. Let's step brothers this thing. I've got this weird little hotel in the East Village where all the beds are like carved into the wall. But they gave me a suite. This thing is like 200 square feet. But so I have my bed over in the window. But when you walk in on the right is another bed. I got an extra bed carved into the wall. You want to have
Let's
six hibiscus
first.
Margaritas? I got you. I got you, buddy.
Baby steps, but I'm not saying no.
All right. You know what? If you come out, we can even talk friends. At Andrew Bogus on Twitter. Let's do buy or sell, all the big headlines from sports and a take on each one next year on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
What's up, Bill?
Oh, the old phone from LA. How's Los Angeles?
It's beautiful. It's amazing out here. The sun just broke through the gloom this morning, or just now, so it is going to be an absolutely perfect day. It's wonderful. It's also 3,000 miles away from you, so it checks all the boxes.
Yeah, so just so you know, probably coming back Saturday, depends on some NBA games, so you might want to just prepare to head back to the East Coast early.
Yeah, I got to get a flight reserved. One of the ones that I can cancel or move, so that if you change your schedule, I can, you know, act accordingly.
The last thing you want is to fly to New York and have me still be in New York, because that would make too much sense for the show. Okay.
Yeah, literally the last thing I want, yes. So as you heard in the Bogus update, there was another fan incident during an NBA playoff game last night. This time a fan ran onto the court in D.C. during Wizards Sixers before being promptly tackled and apprehended by security. Monumental Sports Entertainment, which owns Capital One Arena and the Wizards, later tweeted that the person has been banned. Buy or sell, there is anything more the league can or should be doing to prevent these now nightly incidents from occurring?
I mean, I understand the sentiment, but I'm going to sell that because the reality is, I was thinking about this when I was at the Lakers game last week. You know, it seems there's an incident every other day, so I guess four incidents or two incidents ago, whatever the number is, Tom. if you have fans, they're going to have access to the floor. I mean, idiots can run onto the field. Idiots can run onto the floor. Idiots can throw things. And I think that the right approach, I know somebody got all mad at me and called me Susan or something on Twitter because that person has the IQ of a squirrel, that I was being too overwrought and saying that person should go to jail who threw something at Kyrie Irving. But of course he should. Throw the legal book at folks, and that is how, in the long run, you create consequences. You want these guys to feel like something bad is going to happen if they run onto a floor or they throw something at an athlete. I don't blame the NBA. And I think it's really complicated, Tom, because they're not going to want to line the floor with security because they're really trying to limit how many people can be near the floor because of COVID. I'm in the 100 section, right, as a reporter, and I'm not allowed to step foot, even a step away from the 100 section, or I get banned because they're trying to limit the number of people that are down there. I think it's just one of these really weird things where people are acting, not everybody, but there are some really bad actors, and what you have to do is, like you saw in the game yesterday, tackle these dudes and prosecute them.
So staying on this topic, unfortunately, Hall of Famer Kevin Garnett jumped into the Kyrie Irving court stomping then water bottle tossing controversy on Instagram yesterday, writing, quote, "So nobody going to say anything about Kyrie stomping Lucky? We're just going to act like we didn't see that. You can't do that. That's not cool on any level. All of us need to be better. I'm just saying," end quote. Buy or sell, you are surprised by KG's response to the controversy.
I'll sell that too. Not surprised.
Sell.
And I love the question because I maintain what I said yesterday that for me it's not a big deal. But I'm also not a Celtic. KG has a right to have an opinion here and have an emotional one because he did bleed for that team. And if he thinks Kyrie did something wrong, good for him. I'll just say this, Tom, and we all know this. And you can hear it a little bit now too because there's no one in these arenas. Players on the floor often tell other players in all the sports to do things that are anatomically impossible to themselves and or may or may not bring up their mothers in certain contexts, right? Like, there is some smack talk, there is some language, there are some things that go on. So the notion and idea that it's nothing but respect when guys are competing just isn't true. In a vacuum, should someone tell someone else to do something anatomically impossible to themselves? Maybe not. I guess not, right? But the reality is these are the things that happen. I like the bad blood, and I think KG can be right, and Kyrie can be able to be disrespectful as much as he wants. That's one of the joys of competition.
So the poor Baltimore Orioles have now lost 14 straight games. The plummet to the clear worst record in all of baseball through 2 months of the season. Only the Pirates hold a worse run differential, and no team is as far behind in their division as Baltimore, who trailed the Rays by 17.5 games already. The losing streak is now tied for the second worst in franchise history. It's the longest losing streak in Major League Baseball since the Astros dropped 15 straight in 2013. But at least they made it to extra innings against the Twins last night. Buy or sell, they will beat Minnesota to break the streak either today or in the series finale tomorrow.
You know, I'm going to lean into this and sell because, and I like him, but somewhere a small tear is, or maybe a large one, has fallen from Jason Lockin for his face. Like a diehard Orioles fan. I mean, just... when it rains, it pours sometimes. They're a really bad baseball team. And it does feel like one of those years where when things go bad, they're going to go very, very badly.
PointsBet has released their 2021 NFL Coach of the Year odds. And Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski has opened as the favorite to repeat at plus 1,200. Behind Stefanski is Rams coach Sean McVay, 49ers coach Kyle Shanahan. No surprise there. But then Chargers coach and first-year head coach Brandon Staley and Dolphins head coach Brian Flores, all at plus 1,500. After that, Frank Reich, Sean McDermott, Arthur Smith of the Falcons, Andy Reid, and then Robert Saleh are all at plus 1,800. On the other end, the longest shot coach is, unsurprisingly, David at plus 8,000. Buy or sell, Fancy should be the Coach of the Year favorite heading into this season.
Look, I'm going to sell just in the sense, I'm going to answer in the sense of should you bet on him? Because the thing about the NFL, and part of what makes it magical, is the unpredictability of every team and every season and some of the storylines and successes and failures that pop up. That's part of the magic. And Coach of the Year in particular is often an award that is based on a curve. It is based against our expectations entering the season. The Coach of the Year, I think, Tom, is going to be someone who does something that is really, really surprising. And Stefanski and that team being successful is not one of those things. I think Brian Flores is an interesting bet, and there's probably some names on that list I'm not even thinking of who are going to be in real consideration because there are going to be teams that do things we don't expect.
Man, man, oh man, is it a gigantic game for both the Blazers and the Nuggets. They play the fifth game of their tied series in Denver tonight. The series' two biggest stars, Dame Lillard and Nikola Jokic, have mirrored each other's scoring so far. Jokic averaging 31 points per game over the first four, and Lillard averaging 30.8 points per game. Both players also had their lowest scoring outputs in game four, with Jokic netting only 16 and Lillard scoring only 10 points in the huge Portland win. Buy or sell, both Lillard and Jokic score more than 30 tonight.
More than 30?
Both.
That's a good question, because Lillard probably will. And Portland plays defense about as effectively as me, you, Pete, and Bogus would against five NBA players. I'm going to sell that, though.
Sell.
And here's why. What Denver requires is a team effort and guys like Michael Porter Jr. to show up, man up, and actually put some effort in. They need Jokic to be creating for other guys and other guys be scoring. For me, the main number for Jokic is the number of assists he has. They've gone down markedly in this series against a bad defense. You know, 7 assists, 9 assists, who cares? 10 assists. Just him leading the way and that team moving the ball and a lot of people contributing is the key. So I think it's possible and likely he has fewer than 30, but a huge game.
And we'll end here in a series that has completely flipped. The Suns are now 5-point favorites over the Lakers in a pivotal game 5 tonight. It's certainly a tough game to bet with so much in the air when it comes to the health status of Chris Paul and Anthony Davis. The Vegas is placing the edge on the side of the home team, Suns, who won game 4 in Los Angeles on Sunday. Buy or sell, the Lakers will be able to at least hang within 5 points of Phoenix tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to buy that. I'm contemplating betting the Lakers just because it's – and you said it. Like, I did a segment on CBS Sports HQ literally days ago where the Lakers were huge favorites in the series and the Suns were – what are they? Plus 370. It was a huge number. Plus 400. And I didn't have the guts to bet it, but I said that people should have. I didn't have the guts to do it. This feels like the same thing in reverse. I understand why the Suns are the favorite. I think they're going to win the game. But LeBron James getting 5 points against a young Phoenix Suns team that I like, with Chris Paul's health being a total question mark when he was supposed to sit out the last game, it's probably an avoid, but if I'm betting, I'm 100% betting Lakers getting five. Thank you to Mark Medina from USA Today for making time on the program. Thank you to Andrew Bogish on the updates. Tom DiBenedetto, the producer. Pete Pilotti graciously stepping in and working the board as Tom avoids me on the West Coast because I'm in New York City. Thank you for listening. We appreciate you. I'm Bill Ryder. The show is Ryder Than You, and we'll see you back here tomorrow on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.